faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound. The infant of Krypton is now the Man of Steel, Superman. To best be in a position to use his amazing powers in a never-ending battle for truth and justice, Superman has assumed the disguise of Clark Kent, mild-mannered reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper.
Of course, that was the introduction to the 1940s Max Fleischer cartoon Superman. Superman is one of the more popular and enduring superheroes, but that certainly isn't all there is to comics and graphic novels. And this edition of the Theo Fantastic podcast, which coincides with Comic-Con in San Diego this week, is pleased to have an interview with David Lewis, one of the co-editors with Christine Hoff Kramer of Graven Images, Religion in Comic Books and Graphic Novels. Hope you enjoy this interview in this podcast.
I appreciate you making yourself available. I usually like starting these kinds of interviews with something of the personal background of the individual. And my first question is, how did you develop a personal interest in comics and graphic novels? And how does this personal interest come together with your academic studies as a PhD candidate in religion?
Well, comics and I have an affair that goes back many years. But I thought the story I told myself is that I got into comic books when I was an adolescent. Although I've looked back at some of the family photo albums, and I'm seeing that from age six, I was wearing Batman for Halloween, or I had a Superman doll in my crib. So I'm wondering how much was socialized into me. But I was a fervent reader of just anything I could get my hands on as a pre-adolescent and adolescent. And that included comic books and novels and poetry even. I mean, I was not your typical suburban boy, but comic books were there in the mix. I always enjoyed them. I always delighted in them. It wasn't really, though, until college, midway through my college career, and I went to Brandeis University undergrad, that one of my instructors, one of my professors, said, this was for a Shakespeare class, he knew I had an interest in, at the time, Neil Gaiman's Sandman work. He said, why don't you write a paper about that? And a light went off in my head that you couldn't write about this stuff. I was just consuming it for fun and enjoyment and, a bit of expanding my brain in terms of fantastic ideas. But that's when The Beast was born. That paper became the first conference paper I ultimately gave towards the end of my undergraduate career. As I continued in my studies or even just into different work roles, et cetera, and so forth, I continued to nurse a sort of journalistic interest in comics and then a further academic interest in comics. My master's degree at Georgetown in their English literature department was on both digital and comic book narratology, how to dissect the way story works when it's not strictly printed prose, and either you have, electrons that go with it, or you have pictures that go with it. And then after several years, I returned to the PhD program at Boston University, but I was looking to get much more interdisciplinary, and this time it was religion and literature. I'd already had a great interest in mythology and sacred lore and sort of the narrative histories of all these religions, the narrative sources, what stories they tell themselves, what stories they shape or find holy or even taboo. And I just saw this cropping up in the comics I was reading, both for fun and for academic experience. I already mentioned Sandman, but I was also reading independent fare like Marchant Satrapi's Persepolis. I think we all know Art Spiegelman's Mouse. On the other hand, there's Joe Sacco's Palestine. And then in some of the, more fantastic comics and graphic novels, Kingdom Come series, the Superheroes Kingdom Come series, to name just one or the other. So they all just started dovetailing together with no great intention. I don't want to say that I had a vision in the 15th year of my life. I had a vision that, yay, verily, thou must speakest to the people about comics and the Lord your God. No, it's just that I found that all these things that I was separately drawn to were connecting, and were connecting for other people as well. It wasn't just me being an academe freak. And so my studies continued, my dissertation is underway, and the Graven Images Conference slowly percolated into being.
Well, as you and I record this podcast, Comic-Con is going on in Southern California, and that's obvious to anyone who pays much attention to television and contemporary film that comics and graphic novels are a tremendous source of inspiration for Hollywood in terms of entertainment. But I wonder if in the academy, if scholars and academics, as well as the general public, take these forms of entertainment and communication as seriously as they should, like other cultures like Japan. In your opinion, having pulled together the conference that you spoke of, which resulted in your book, Graven Images, do you think that situation is changing? Are scholars starting to take this form of expression more seriously for academic study?
I think scholars are taking comics and graphic novels more seriously, but the important word there is more. I remember growing up, and I'm a 30-something-year-old guy, that I was delighted when I found a Michigan's Wolverine hat, that the mascot, the team name for the team in Michigan were the Wolverines, because I'm like, oh, this has a personal meaning to me. Wolverine, the X-Men. Yeah. It was hard during my time growing up, and I have to imagine for people who grew up before me in the 1970s and even the late 1960s, it was hard to find mainstream expressions of the various comic book, and that's largely superhero, but not exclusively superhero. Hard to find expressions of this when you're just out and about. There weren't a lot of movies, say the Superman movie, and then in the later 80s, the Batman movie. Comics culture was not as much a part of mainstream popular American culture until the last 10 years, let's say. The fact that you can watch the news and it has a segment on Comic-Con, the fact that you can go to the movie theater and it's packed with superhero movies, I think a transition has happened in American society in general, where people that grew up on comics, and again, I am being explicit here, not just superhero comics, the works of Harvey Pekar, of Art Spiegelman, of R. Crumb, the people that grew up these things are now the people that are in the power positions, whether that's in Hollywood, whether that's, you know, that's television, that's film, even in music. And in academia, I have gray hair now, and I never would have expected that. But the same kid that was reading comics at the same time that he had Hamlet in his backpack is now in the position of a professor, an instructor, and also a publisher. This is happening more and more often across the country. Now, there's still an old guard at institutions around the world and across the United States that still don't hold comics and graphic novels in high regard. And to be entirely honest, there's a lot that the industry, the comics and graphic novels industry, is doing to help the old guard not want them to be part of the discussion. You know, 10% of every medium could be art, but 90% is lousy. There's still lousiness out there. There always will be. But I think there is an incline, an upward trend for whether it's the production of comics, whether it's their cultural impact. I'm looking at it from the religiosity or the religious criticism, even. I think that is on the rise. What I find particularly interesting, and this goes back to my master's work at Georgetown, online stories, even video games, became interesting to scholars much quicker, in a much shorter period of time than comics have. It has taken comics approximately 4 to 5 decades to become a real viable discussion point. And there have been pioneers long before me bringing the worlds together, academia and comics together. But digital text moved quick into academia. We have things like film studies that did have its own natural laboring period, but is now an accepted field. And I think comics will get there too, but it has to continue to put out work that's worth it. It can't just be a topic because it's endured, because it's hung around. But I'm optimistic about it.
Well, I will try to share your optimism. I hope so. What about religion scholars? When you pulled together this conference, which led to the book Graven Images, I would imagine there was some resistance or slowness to recognize the validity of comics and graphic novels in general, but then to take that extra step and say, we're going to look at it from the perspective of religion and its influence and content. Do you think religion scholars are starting to come around as well?
Well, my experience of religion scholars, and again, I'm coming from an interdisciplinary background. I did English and psychology first, then English and multimedia, and then into religion and lit. Not to say I'm any less dedicated to the study of religion, but religion scholars, I think they do accept that cultures always produce artifacts. And what do I mean by this? I mean, when people are trying to, let me just pick a topic out of the air, when they're trying to reconstruct the historical Jesus, and they're using clay pottery to do it, or old tabulation forms to do it, they recognize that everything in a culture has some value to reflect back on the culture. I hope I'm making some sense with all that. But so if comics are a useful way to look in at the popular expression of religion, then so be it. Right? There's not a lot of opposition there. I'll tell you where the opposition is, if there is any. And the wonderful thing I do have to say is that I haven't encountered a great deal of opposition. The only gatekeepers would be, A, granting degrees around this topic, and B, in conjunction with that, granting money around this topic. I don't think anyone is opposed to the discussion of whether comic books and graphic novels have an interface with religion. I think it's actually pretty well acknowledged that they do. The question is how much time should be put to this, how much money should be put to this to the detriment of other fields of getting money, and then what degree of rigorous scholarship can be done on this that is useful for everyone, that isn't just an exercise, but that actually resonates into other discussions. When we put together Graven Images, we were, and when I say we, I'm talking about myself and Christian Kramer, who is my co-organizer on the conference and then my co-editor on the book. We were in the extremely fortunate position to already have funding, that we had the generosity of Dante scholar Peter S. Hawkins and the Luce Foundation and Boston University. They had the space, they had the time, they had a bit of stipend to bring in keynote speakers. We had the lion's share of what would have been the difficult part already in place. When we put out an announcement that here's what we want to do, here's what we want to study, here's what we want to discuss, people came out of the woodwork. People came from everywhere. This was a topic that had been in a lot of religion scholars' minds. Now, contemporary religious scholars like myself were in their 40s or even in their 50s, but these are also human beings that have interests and passions and nerdity and geekdom outside their formal studies. And the chance to have the two interface excited a lot of people. We made it convenient for travel. This was in the Boston area, so I mean, a lot of East Coast scholars and institutions could make it. Other people came from across the world and across the country to make it also. But when we talk about opposition, the opposition isn't in the discussion. No one is laughing us out of the room. Any opposition comes from, are we doing this to the detriment of something else, and purse strings. But I think that's the burden that any worthwhile topic, especially a newer one, carries when it comes to academic institutions.
Well, let's talk some specifics about your fine book, Graven Images, Religion in Comic Books and Graphic Novels. One of the things I appreciate about the volume is its diversity of religious perspectives. It doesn't bring just one largely dominant religious tradition. It looks at something of a spectrum. How did the contributions and selection process come about as you put together this volume?
Well, when you say that there was no one dominant faith, I appreciate that, because that was something that Christine and I very much had in mind. We knew that there were already some works out there, some publications out there, that did look at comics, but from largely just one viewpoint. And they're entitled to do that. That is a worthwhile discussion to have. That's a worthwhile book to have. I'm not disparaging them in any way. But what those books lacked in many cases was any sort of interface, any sort of cross, so that we're talking about the idea of religion, not a religion. So Christine and I were very focused on this. We received a number of proposals on Judaism and comics, and a majority of those had to turn down, not because it's not a worthwhile topic, but because there were already other resources for it out there. I can name off the top of my head, from Krakow to Krypton, disguised as Clark Kent, up in Oy Vey. These books and these discussions are already happening. So this was certainly nothing against Judaism, but we wanted something, if not new, brought to the table, then something that hasn't been, that wouldn't be an echo or a repeat of something else we've already read out there. Christine has an intimate familiarity with neo-pagan traditions, modern neo-pagan traditions, so that was exciting that she could put a call for papers out in that community and receive some really fantastic and in-depth scholarly work there. I will say that I got to write about Superman, not because I held the plum rose for myself, that, like I said, no one can have Superman but me. I must use Superman. But a lot of people dodged superheroes, either because they figured there was going to be an overabundance of superheroes in the book, or because they wanted to really dig into the small press, indie, or even religious comics. So that was one thing that very much excited me. We had a number of papers dealing with comics that were explicitly religious, so whether you go to Chick Tracks or you go to comics put out by a particular religious denomination, evangelical comics. So we had the superhero comics were a little light, and no one was talking Superman, so I had the opportunity to do that. What else went into the selection process? We knew that we were going to be asking for thoughtful essays by comic book creators. We wanted that insight, not just the ivory tower folk, but also the people that are in the trenches. And from my background in also writing comics, not just writing about comics, I knew a few members of that community that could speak to it intelligently. And the one other cross that I'd mentioned that was exciting when we put this together is we had practitioners of religions as well as observers of religion. And when I mean observers, I should probably qualify that better. We had theologians. We had people that were actively involved in thoughts about faith, and we had religious scholars. Those aren't mutually exclusive, but we had people looking from the outside in on a faith, and we had people looking from the inside in on a faith. And everybody played so nicely with each other. I think that I think religion, when you talk about capital R religion, it gets a very bad rap, because it sounds like everyone's just going to either guard their territory or beat up on someone else, and that's not it at all. I think people who are serious about the study of religion are looking for bridges or contrasts or points of worthwhile discussion. They're not just playing to win. And so I was very much gratified that if people were going to use comic books as a tool to look at religion, they were using it as a constructive tool, not a kumbaya sort of everyone must love each other tool, but certainly not a pointed or aggressive tool. One more thing I should point out about Graven Images, it includes discussions about non-belief, about comics being used to criticize religion. So this isn't, we're not coming from the position of you must love religion. If you love religion, you'll love this book. It's not anything like that. It's looking at the engagement from all angles, how comics use religion, how religion use comics, comics against religion, religion against comics. There are so many different ways into this core that we saw Graven Images as sort of a necessary book to have out there, if not a necessary set of books. We always have this discussion whether another volume will come down the pike, but we're extraordinarily happy with the way they got that we got the mix just about right for this first volume.
Well, if I get your comments on some of the chapters there, your thoughts on some of the contributors. There's a chapter in there which looks at Protestant evangelicalism and fundamentalists and how they have used comics as a medium. One of the things I found interesting in that chapter is the difficulty that some folks in these groups have had adjusting to the appropriate use of the medium to get their message out. Can you touch on some of that?
Well, comic, is that Kate Netzler's chapter, or is that, do you happen to know if it's Netzler or...
Yeah, I'll have to thumb through here as you go along here, but I just remember one chapter standing out. It mentioned Chick Comics and some others, and the basic thrust of it was they're using the medium, but they're having a tough time maintaining, they feel, the integrity of their tradition and the best way to use comics as a medium to get the message out.
Yeah. Well, two thoughts come to mind when I read that essay, and it is an excellent piece of the book, a real worthwhile piece. The first is that we are talking about the Western Church, largely speaking, not Greek Orthodox, some version of Greek Orthodox evangelicalism. And the Western Church, when they had their schism, one of the key issues here was manifestation, visuality. And throughout the years, the Western Church, whether we're talking strictly Catholicism or we're talking about versions of Protestantism, have had issue with just how visual do you make faith before it becomes an issue of idolatry or starts to lead down that path. And shouldn't it be the spiritual eye and not the sensory, the bodily eye dealing with matters of faith? As we come into the 20th century, late 20th century, early 21st century, and in the U.S. is a hugely visual society, I don't think there's any denying that, there's been this struggle to adjust. How do you incorporate visuality without backpedaling on hundreds of years of theology? What I would add to that also is that I think Rocco Versace, I think his book is called Warning, this book contains graphic language. Rocco Versace puts out the idea that comics have what's called a fringe power, a marginal power, that is only recently have people started paying attention to them. I think, like I said, before that, they were on the fringes of society. They were only being used by you know, really in cities and by, if not a cultural elite, then some form of a, and some form of readership that wanted this engagement with words and pictures together. There was a brief time in America where it was a mainstream hit, you know, during the time of World War II, but it was still low culture. So during the 60s, 70s, and even you might say 80s, comics could get away with saying and showing a lot. Saying and showing unpopular or radical or unorthodox things, and not being brought to task the way that television or the newsprint media or film might. I think that has some roots with evangelical Christianity, in that there was a point where comics were up there with, you don't read comic books, you don't listen to rock and roll, and you don't wear a skirt shorter than yay high. And that is something that's had to be adjusted to as this powerful marginality of comics has increased and it's become focused on more by culture as being useful to PR. Public relations use comic books, marketing uses comic books, or at least sequential art. The evangelicals have had to say, okay, maybe we can use this, but it does go ever so slightly against a subtle piece of their grain.
Yeah, incidentally, it was, as I thumbed through the book and the table of contents, it was Kate Netzler's chapter I had in mind, right. Hesitant to Embrace Comic Books and Evangelicals, just for folks who may want to take a closer look at that.
And I should mention a bias here, that Kate also comes from Boston University. That's the reason I asked. I would hate for this to become, Graven Images to become the Boston University book, but that's where the conference happened, and she was already in the mix of people interested in this discussion.
I did appreciate your chapter on Superman. And one of the interesting things that you bring out in your discussion is there has been a tendency from some commentators and critics to look at Superman as something of a Christ figure with connections to the Christian tradition. But you draw out other religious connections to Superman. Can you touch on some of those?
Sure. I think it would be naive if I were to just say, nope, Superman, not a Christ figure. Sorry, no, not going to buy it. Because there are different elements of the character that can be lined up with that trope, the idea of being a Christ figure, very easily and very naturally. And even with Superman's creators, Siegel and Shuster, being Jewish, that doesn't mean that they were blind, deaf, and dumb to Christian culture that basically has influenced almost all of American writing since the beginning of America. But I think it's a poor discussion to say Superman is a Christ figure, period, let's move on. If you're going to do something useful with that observation, if that's going to lead you to further insights, either into perspectives on Jesus or on Christianity or on Superman and his popularity as an American icon, then we have a worthwhile discussion. But to end it at, I have made the equal sign, Superman equals Jesus, that's not rigorous. Others have claimed, I should say, that Superman is a Mosaic figure, that he symbolizes Moses, you know, son cast out amongst the reeds into the water, but only later to rise up and save his people. That is, I put that in the same category as I put the Christ figure discussion. Okay, now what? It's what you would put at the end of an English composition paper. Good observation. What is the significance?
Mm-hmm.
The significance to me is in looking at how both Judaism and Christianity, and I haven't seen this anywhere, but I would love to read Islam or other religions that are applying a messianic importance or a deliverer importance to Superman. I would love to see that because I think the argument could be made. But the overall point being made here is that Superman is being seen as a savior figure for a number of religions, and that kind of wouldn't exactly call it ecumenical, or that relationship is of much more interest to me. We have all these religions seizing Superman as a savior role, and that leads me to the question: well, what is a savior role? If I disconnect it from Jesus, if I disconnect it from Moses, I don't know if it's been connected to Muhammad, but let's say it has been. And if I were to disconnect it from Muhammad, what is the importance of Superman being a savior? What's the religious value of that? I brought it back in my chapter to a slightly more literary term. I was looking at it from a meta-narrative perspective. That is, the character Superman saves other people, and the meta-critical role of Superman is to save other stories. There have been hundreds, if not thousands, of unsuccessful superheroes launched since the 1940s, whenever DC Comics or whoever is in ownership of Superman at that time has wanted to popularize that character. They have had Superman cross paths with that character, or had a Superman clone, someone that's derivative of Superman, cross paths with that character. I enjoyed looking at the idea of what saving or salvation means when you extract it from a specific religion. And I think Superman still serves this saving role, but in a narrative sense, the way that a computer or a hard drive saves information, Superman maintains others' stories. That the story of Superman becomes the story of everyone he has interacted with, everyone who has fallen along the way, everyone that has died of old age or died tragically, even of the villains he's opposed. That Superman becomes this sacred text himself. And I see that as being the underlying theme beneath do we relate him to Moses? Do we relate him to Jesus? Do we relate him to some other religious figure? The fact that he is both literally saving people from peril, but also bringing them into his eternal mythos, that's exciting to me. That's a discussion that we can have, a character as a text. I got to lay it out in the chapter, and I've received very enthusiastic responses to it since it was published.
One section of the book which was especially interesting to me is your segment on postmodern religiosity. And yeah. I note in that section that there are several entries that deal with various aspects of the Western esoteric tradition. I've covered this quite a bit on my blog and interviews and posts with other authors looking at the incorporation of ideas from Western esotericism in pop culture. And it just seems to me, I wonder if perhaps those who follow that tradition are able to somehow draw upon comics and graphic novels and other aspects of pop culture to combine and interweave their religious ideas and expressions, perhaps in ways that are easier than those in more mainstream traditional religions that view scripture as sacred text. Any thoughts on something like that?
John, I think you're absolutely right. I think that there is some coming together of these different streams, comics and Western esotericism. I don't know what the mechanism is, though. I don't know why exactly they come together. I could talk about, again, going back to the former fringe status of comics and maybe esotericism creeping in from the side, you know, creeping in from the margin. I could talk about the visual element of comics or the double channel text and image the hybridity of comics and whether or not that speaks to the tradition. But I don't honestly have the concrete answer why. I only have the empirical observation that you have. That is, yes, comics seem to be engaging in this idea. I don't know if it's more often, but certainly more notably, maybe more powerfully than we're seeing in a lot of other media. I think about the works of Grant Morrison. I think about the works of Alan Moore. And if you were to just, limit the discussion to those two men, those two Brits, although I think Morrison's Scottish, but point remains, if you were to just look at what they've brought to both superhero and other genres of comics, maybe Warren Ellis as well, still British, and look at the popularity of those comics, influence of those comics, how those comics have led to other storytelling conventions, it's an amazing ripple effect. Now, coming from an Abrahamic background, such as myself, the majority of what I've learned about modern Western esotericism has its heart, has its first foot in comics. Now, I don't know why that is. Why didn't music teach it to me first? You know, the pop or indie music I run into. Why didn't films teach it to me first? Why wasn't there some hit TV show about Western esotericism? Although you could maybe argue Lost was about that. Depends on how you interpret it. But there is absolutely this potent mix, this potent amalgamation between the two, but I still can't, after doing this reading, reading the chapters in this book, talking with other scholars, I don't think anyone's put their finger yet on why or how this this blend is happening with the potency that it is.
Well, David, I thoroughly enjoyed your book, and I do hope indeed that there's a at least one more volume. Perhaps this could be some, the beginning of a series of explorations that you're involved with. And I encourage folks to pick it up at their local bookstore
maybe
or online.
Maybe they can write about Jesus in Islam and why modern Western esotericism is showing up in comics. The questions that I have in this interview could be essays for the next volume.
There you go. There's a good pitch. Let's hope it comes together.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time.